City Council will come to order. Good morning, everybody. I am not Mayor Adams for some of the younger people who are here. Mayor Adams is in Washington, D.C., representing the city, and so as the President of the Council, it's my honor to chair this meeting. And before we begin our formal session, we have a proclamation to read and some very special people to acknowledge, and I'd like to recognize Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, President Fisch. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to your City Council. I'm Commissioner Amanda Fritz, and as you can see, I used to be a Girl Guide, which is the British equivalent of Girl Scouts, and it's going to be my honor to read a proclamation, but first I'd like you to have your say, and welcome to City Council. So please tell us your name and what you have to say.
Hello, City Council members. I am Catherine Lock-Harris, and I'm in third grade, and I'm a Brownie Girl Scout. Juliet Gordon Lowe founded Girl Scouts to teach girls service, leadership, and love for nature. 100 years later, Girl Scouting is still important to girls like me. Through Girl Scouting, I have learned many things like camping, hiking, fire building, flag ceremonies, helping other people, and how to ride the bus and light rail. Girl Scouts teach us leadership, good values, skills, and encourage us to take action to make the world a better place. In honor of the 100th anniversary, my Brownie Troops Take Action project is to make 100 personal kits for the homeless youth at Outside In. I hope you will declare March 12, 2012, Girl Scout Day in the city of Portland in honor of our 100th anniversary. Thank you.
Thank you. Good job.
You know, we don't normally allow for applause, but I think today we're going to suspend the rules. Let's thank you for a wonderful testimony.
Your turn.
Hi, I'm Quinn. I'm a junior Girl Scouts. Girl Scouts is important to a lot of people, and it should have a day when it can be celebrated. Girl Scouts has been going on for a long time, and Monday, March 12th, is our 100th anniversary. As a Girl Scout in Portland, I've helped other girls like the medically fragile Girl Scout troop at Providence Hospital who can't do the same things we can. We raised money for Haiti after the hurricane, and on the 100th anniversary, we are going to help the Make-A-Wish Foundation because we think it is a great thing to help people any day, but it is even better to help people on the 100th anniversary. When we were in first grade, we were Brownies. We made a wish box and put all of our wishes into it. Our troop has been able to do mostly all of them, but we haven't gone to Disneyland yet. We want to go to the moon, but our leaders are taking us to the Evergreen Air and Space Museum instead. Please declare March 12th Girl Scout Day in Portland.
Yay. Thank you very much. Welcome.
I'm Taylor Lenzen. Every year, I help my mom plan West of the Willamette Girl Scout Day Camp. In 2000, a family of friends started this camp, and about 20 people attended. 12 years later, we now serve around 400 campers and adults from the Portland area. My mom took over the position of director in 2008, and I felt that I wanted to help in some way. I had grown up at this camp, and I felt that the best way to give back to the camp that molded me was to step up and get involved in the planning. My position started out small, attending core staff meetings and occasionally giving input, but with confidence would increase in the following years. I started entering the registrations in the database and would place the campers into their units that they would be in for the camp week. This year, I have the official title of Program Aid Coordinator, while I will be the mentor for the 8th grade to 12th grade camp leaders throughout the week. I cannot say how much this camp and the Girl Scouts have changed the person who I am. I used to be the shy girl who would never leave her mother's side, and now I'm a senior at St. Mary's Academy, getting ready to take on her next stage in life. Currently, I hold a high position on my school's newspaper, and I'm the editor of the school yearbook. All these are feats that I never envisioned I would achieve and do not believe that I would be here without the support of my camp and the Girl Scouts.
Did you want to end
there? I'm Karen Hill, CEO of Girl Scouts of Oregon and Southwest Washington. Thank you for having us today. As you can see, Girl Scouts is alive and well and truly building leadership in girls. So on behalf of the 19,000-plus girls and 11,000-plus adults in our council, please declare March 12th, 2012, Girl Scout Day in Portland. Thank you.
Well, faced with those beautiful pleas, I think I'll just go ahead and do that. Whereas March 12, 2012 marks the 100th anniversary of Girl Scouts of the United States of America, founded by Juliet Gordon Lowe in 1912 in Savannah, Georgia. And whereas throughout its distinguished history, Girl Scouting has inspired millions of girls and women with its mission to build girls of courage, confidence, and character to make the world a better place. And whereas through the Girl Scout leadership experiences, girls develop the skills and lessons that will serve them throughout their lives so that they may contribute to their communities. And whereas Girl Scouts takes an active role in increasing girls' awareness of the opportunities in math, science, sports, technology, and many fields of interest that can expand their horizons. And whereas millions of Girl Scout members nationwide and thousands of girls in Portland will be celebrating this American tradition and welcome girls from every background to join. And whereas the City of Portland acknowledges and applauds the efforts of this fine organization, both locally and globally. And whereas the Girl Scouts are celebrating the 100th year of providing leadership and making the future women of Portland confident and skilled. Now, therefore, Sam Adams, the mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, does hereby proclaim March 12, 2012, to be Girl Scout Day in Portland, and we encourage all residents to observe this day. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, you get to keep that.
Putting my jacket on because Girl Scouts don't take out much time sitting down, and it's cold in here.
Wow.
So my uniform is not warm enough for city business.
Why did Commissioner Leonard get the cookies?
He's supposed to share.
I had to buy mine. Well, I had to buy my box.
I'm not a good sharer.
Okay. Council will come to order. Carla, how are you?
Well, thank you.
If you could please call the roll.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Adams?
Quorum is present. We have four council communications this morning. Carla, would you please call the first?
Item 208, request of David G. Gwyther to address council regarding parking issues.
Welcome, Mr. Gwyther.
Thank you.
You have 3 minutes, sir.
Okay. First of all, I want to commend the Girl Scouts as a former Boy Scout. Parking issues. Actually, I have two other things going on, but we'll talk about parking first. As you probably know, their parking meters were replaced a few years ago with new meters that sometimes work and sometimes don't. One of the problems is that they forgot to put the help number so that if your meter malfunctions, there isn't a number to call that is permanently stuck on the meter. I complained about this, and I assume other people did too, and they put paper stickers there which are easily removed or fall off or wear out. So my suggestion is to put a plaque that's made out of plastic and glue it right to the parking meter so that if there's a problem, they can be dealt with because you're probably losing parking revenue just by not having, you know, a 50-cent plaque on there rather than a 10-cent piece of paper. My second issue is parking tickets. Right now, they're processed through the circuit court, which takes up a fair amount of time. 99% of them are dealt with by the clerks in the county court. My suggestion is to run those through municipal court because you're spending, I think, 60% of the parking ticket revenue goes to the circuit court system. That could be going into the municipal court system and those employees who open the envelopes and take care of the checks that are mailed in could be transferred over to the city. I know that there's been, over the years, there's been changes between what the responsibilities are between the city and county, and this is one area where I think the city and the public could benefit by that transfer. And also, the county courts are pretty clogged up right now with a number of actual criminal cases that have nothing to do with parking. My second suggestion is with the traffic light cameras. As you may remember, a couple of years ago, the camera right out here in front of City Hall was miscalibrated so that it was giving people tickets. I think it was 0.2 seconds difference. So if you came up to a green light, if you didn't hesitate, you'd still get a ticket even though it was green. I figured that out, and along with an attorney, he was able to get the evidence, and he won his case. I did not prevail because I couldn't bring a reasonable. My suggestion is to take over the process. Right now, you have a contractor that takes care of all of the cameras in the town, and you also split revenue with the tickets. I think we'd have the public would be better served by having the city administer that program wholly. I'm sure the technology needs to be upgraded from time to time, and that can be done on a contractual basis. And I'll be back next week with my next month with my third item, because it looks like I'm out of time.
Thank you very much, sir. Okay. Carla, would you please read the next item?
209, request of Jeff Olson to address council regarding health care.
Welcome, Mr. Olson. Just need your full name, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is Jeff Olson. I'd like to thank the council for the opportunity. We are the only industrialized nation in the world that does not provide health care to nearly all of its citizens. The good news is that there are cities across the country that have taken the initiative and are beginning to change that. The bad news is that Portland is not one of them. For example, the medical community of Grand Junction, Colorado, has united under this chief operating principle. The primary objective of the practice of medicine is to serve the people as well as possible. Not just some of the people who can afford it, but all of the people. They're doing just that in Grand Junction. When asked how they accomplished this in an interview, several physicians said this: "It takes strong leadership that is immune to the allure of money and influence." There's something that Portland needs to learn from Grand Junction. It costs more to not insure all of its citizens than to insure all of its citizens. In other words, it costs less to insure everyone. More importantly to the council is that people who are well cared for are happier, which means Portland becomes a more desirable place to live and do business. Portland has a $17 million general fund shortfall, and so does TriMet. TriMet's financial difficulties are expressly related to health care, not just overly generous insurance plans for union workers. More than anything, it is the inefficiencies within the healthcare system and money interests that are bleeding our bank accounts, whether it's TriMet's bank account, Portland's businesses' bank accounts, or the bank accounts of uninsured, underinsured, or people crippled by high insurance rates. We spend $550 billion a year as a nation on cancer, diabetes, and heart disease alone. Portland's piece of this pie is about $1 billion. Do you think there's some room for improvement? And this is only the monetary side of the issue. The most precious resource being drained here is not the money, it's the health of our people. How much is that Portland family going to be able to enjoy the wonderful things that Portland has to offer, like new sidewalks and bike lanes, if dad just had a debilitating stroke or mom has cancer and they can't afford the medical bills? So far, our leadership has not been willing to tackle the problem in ways that really work. We're too busy making a mess into more of a mess. We muddy the water with strategies that only complicate things further. Commissioner candidate Steve Novick said it well when he noted that when someone has healthcare problems today, they call 911. The cost to healthcare and the emergency response system is tremendous. What are we going to include in our vision for Portland? A person must be alive and well to enjoy living here. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Olson.
Mr. Olson, what city was that? Grand Junction?
Grand Junction, Colorado.
Colorado. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Carlo, could you please read the next item?
Mm-hmm. Item 210, request of Roy Weedman to address council regarding small business.
Good morning, Mr. Weedman.
How you doing? I'm here to promote the Small Business Development Center. I learned a lesson last time from Sam Adams. You don't get a second bite of the apple, so I wrote it down.
Right. We just need your full name, and you have 3 minutes, sir.
Okay. Roy Weedman, and I own Bud Construction. And I'm here before you today to thank you for all your support and efforts for small businesses. And I want to encourage you to continue this great work. I want to share with you my business success story. In early spring 2009, I was considering closing my business, a trucking company, due to a lack of sales. I'd been in the business since 1992, but was struggling. I attended a program about how to do business with the city of Portland in 2009, and was referred to the Small Business Development Center at that time. Since 2009, I have taken Small Business Management Class 2 and 3, as well as the ODOT Small Business Management 1 program. I feel strongly that because of the education and advising I received from the Small Business Development Center program, I am in business today. For example, in 2008, my total sales were $56,000. Today, I am grossing more than $500,000 a year. I have 5 full-time employees and 2 part-time employees. In 2008, I wouldn't have been able to tell you my sales because I didn't have financial reports or a CPA. Today, I have the information at my fingertips. The advising I've received from Tammy Marquez Odom and Regina Gilbert, both with Small Business Development Center, have helped me save money, build systems, and create the infrastructure that I didn't have before. They have also increased my confidence in which I can do and what I can accomplish. And as the results, I have achieved more than any future goals I will set can be achieved. Finally, it's important for me to be able to give back. In the winter of 2010, one of my employees had his electricity cut off and had no heat. I paid his electrical bills for a couple months. I also purchased a pickup so he could continue to work. And although he's no longer an employee of mine, he has moved on to a different job, even better, as a mechanic, and I was very pleased to be able to help him get back on his feet. Thank you again, Mayor and Commissioners, for all your work on supporting small business. I ask you to continue to fund strategic programs such as the Small Business Development Center, storefront grants, and microloans for startup companies. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Gibbon.
Thanks for taking the time to come in and tell that. That was very helpful.
Thank you.
Carla, could you please call the next item?
Item 211, request of Mike O'Callaghan to address council regarding shelterless.
Good morning, Mr. O'Callaghan. We just need your full name, and you have 3 minutes, sir.
Michael O'Callaghan, and pleasure to see you again. And were any of you Boy Scouts? I was a Boy Scout. You Boy Scouts at all?
Scout.
Oh, really? Okay. Our youth, it forms our youth, huh? Anyway, I'm here not necessarily to make this announcement. I'm going to make this announcement. I'm leaving the board as Secretary Treasurer of Right to Dream 2. At Right to Dream 2, we have developed a model down there which is duplicatable. We would look forward to being allowed to duplicate that model in a different way. I'm here to talk to you, as I have many times, about shelterlessness. As we all know, there are far more on our streets. When I first came to talk to you, I said it'd double in a year, and it did. And now, in a year, it's up probably about 25-30%, something like that. I just saw a book which I think is appropriate in this situation as far as decision makers go. It's called The Tyranny of Indifference. Now, where do all these homeless people come from? Foreclosures. Right? Pretty simple, right? Yep, foreclosures. More people are out of their houses. They're on the street. Pretty straight up. I, in addition to a number of other things, do legal research, and I've been researching foreclosures now for about 2 years. I've researched 25 foreclosures in Multnomah County, and I've yet to find one that is in accordance with Oregon law. 25 out of 25 were illegal. State of California did a study just released a week ago. 85% of their foreclosures are illegal. Okay, all these foreclosures are illegal. So I would ask you to do a little research on this, and you'll find out it's true, and ask the Attorney General to stop all foreclosures. We're going to try and do this through legal process, okay? And another thing I would encourage you to do is to assess $2,000 fines on any properties that sit vacant. Okay, these banks make money off of leaving abandoned properties in our community, and they drive our community down. Florida, 1 out of 6 is empty. Do we want that in Portland? We put $1,000 fines on these properties, $2,000 fines, they're going to start moving them. Okay, we have a self-help group of 16 people that are in the process of filing litigation. Some have been in litigation for a year. We're meeting on Saturday at 10 a.m. at SEIU at 6401 Southeast Foster. If anybody is in foreclosure or you know anyone in foreclosure, invite them to the meeting, and we'll see if their foreclosure was illegal too. In all likelihood, it was. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, we will take up the consent agenda. Does anyone want to pull anything from the consent agenda?
I'd like to pull item 221.
Dan, do you want that heard on the regular agenda today?
Yes.
All right, so item number, pardon me?
Vicki is here.
Okay, so item number 221 will be, I think our practice is it goes to the end of the agenda. It will be the last item heard today. Any other items? Does anyone in the public wish to pull any item? Carla, would you please call the roll? Mm-hmm.
Fritz?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye. We have a 9:30 time cert this morning. Carla, would you please read the title?
Item 212, accept the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission State of the City Preservation Report.
Commissioner Dan Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a pleasure to bring forward this morning the Historic Landmarks Commission's State of the City Preservation Report. And the first item of business is to really thank the dedicated members who serve on this commission. This commission meets a minimum of twice a month and often for multiple hours as they review land use, cases, and provide advice. They are a hardworking group that includes Kerry Richter, who is up here as chair. Brian Emmerich is vice chair. Karen Carlson, Harris Matarazzo, Paul Solomano, and Jessica Ingman. I don't know if we have any members in the audience. Please stand up so we can just recognize you. Thank you. Thank you. This report comes to council at a critical time for historic preservation in Portland. Development is increasing, and Portland's older neighborhoods and commercial corridors are under pressure. They deserve appropriate protection of the culturally significant resources that are part of the neighborhood's identity. And there's no doubt that the commission is working doubly hard as the volume of their work is increasing, in no small part due to the Irvington neighborhood's designation as an historic district, which added more than 2,800 properties to the fold. And we'll hear much more about Irvington and Buckman neighborhood and how these east side neighborhoods are grappling with the historic landmarks process, a process that everyone agrees needs adjustment and change. Specifically, the commission and bureau staff need more effective tools to protect historic resources while allowing reasonable additions and alterations to homes. These changes would include updating the 1987 Historic Resource Inventory. 1987, it's practically a historic document itself. We need simple regulations that are appropriate for the scale of a specific project and a system that makes it easy and affordable for a property owner to do the right thing and doesn't create a disincentive to follow the rules. The good news is that we all recognize this need, and folks are serious about getting something done this calendar year. The Bureau of Development Services staff, as well as the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff, are already scoping out potential solutions, and we hope to have a draft work plan produced in the next month or so. The goal of this work will be to maintain and build public support for the historic preservation. And in order to do this, we need regulations and processes that are light on oversight and therefore affordable, while still maintaining the historic community continuity of our great neighborhoods. I look forward to hearing more today from the commission members and interested public, and I'm committed to supporting the commission in all of its efforts. So I'll turn it over now to Director Paul Scarlett, and then Commission Chair Kerry Richter will take the helm. So Paul?
Thank you. And good morning, Commissioner Salzman and President Fish and Commissioner Leonard, Commissioner Fritz. I'm Paul Scarlett, Director of Bureau of Development Services. I am joined today by Kerry Richter, the Chair, as you've said, to my left, and Brian Emmerich, the Vice Chair of the Landmarks Commission. My memo that was included with the report dated March 7th covers a number of areas of concern, opportunities, challenges that exist in historic preservation work that's been ongoing in the city for a number of years. Historic preservation for residential neighborhoods, individual properties, commercial corridors, I believe are a vibrant and vital part and element of a city's unique livability, attractiveness, economic vitality. And to that end, I can't thank the commission members and their work and the work they've done enough. The report that's in front of you includes a number of concerns, some proposals for solutions, and I will, of course, leave the contents of the report to the chair and vice chair to highlight. My goal in partnering with the commission is to promote the preservation efforts that's underway in the city. I can tell you personally that I, in my earlier years of being a city planner, I was involved in preservation efforts. The Woodlawn Conservation District is one of the earlier plans I worked on, and I recall the enthusiasm, the effort of all the residents in wanting to have their neighborhood preserved because of the uniqueness and the attractiveness, and it's just a matter of pride having an area that's preserved. As you all know, you've all traveled across the country and around the world. Promotional guides and any kind of pamphlet usually highlights a historic district. And in Portland, we are a fairly young city, incorporated in 1859, but we do have buildings, areas that we're very proud of and want to make sure those areas are preserved. The guidelines and regulations in place, I do believe, create opportunities to preserve those areas, but at the same time, we have identified that some of those very regulations create obstacles, obstacles and challenges in time it takes to conduct the review, the cost it takes to do the review, the complexity involved in the review, and to some degree, the coordination between the various entities, for example, the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability that writes the zoning code and Bureau of Development Services that administers zoning code, the State Preservation Office. And so those coordination, all of which are highlighted in the report, are pretty instrumental in how we advance this preservation effort. And I can't, again, be more proud, one of our staff that's working closely with the commission, working with And as you know, Commissioner Salzman, we've been working closely with Mayor Adams' office and the Bureau of Sustainability. Myself have met with Susan Anderson, sharing some of these concerns of the regulations that are supposed to preserve but are yet creating a hardship, undue hardship, in terms of cost and time and complexity. And we have costs that are sort of one size fit all, and we, of course, know that there are some solutions such as tailored and tiered costs that would be more proportionate to the type of changes. For example, changing out a window versus putting on an addition. Same time frame, 6 to 8 weeks. That's a long time to do a major or minor change. And so there are recommendations. There are concerns about the fees, but I do believe that one solution of the fees would be to create exemptions for minor work and possibly exemptions that are not visible from the right-of-way. Those solutions are going to be discussed, and as is consistent with City of Portland, will be pretty open, involve public process, and hopefully get to solutions that are workable and reasonable. And maintain and preserve and promote historic features of not just the architectural features, but the social features. So Tim Herron, senior planner, is one of the staff that's instrumental in that work, works closely with the commission. And Susan McKinney is the manager for that section. And I want to thank Rebecca Esau, who's a division manager, who closely briefs myself and Commissioner Salzman's office on the various aspects of the opportunities and challenges related to historic preservation and historic design guidelines. So to not take too much time away from the commissioners, again, I want to thank you for the work you've done. I'm very happy to be involved. In fact, I met with you about 6 weeks ago and expressed my gratitude for the work you're doing and share the concerns and want to work closely with collaborating on solutions. So thank you, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. President Fish and commissioners, my name is Carrie Richter. I am the recently imbued chair of the Portland Landmarks Commission, taken over from Art DeMuro, who did a wonderful job and set the stage beautifully for Brian and my assumption to the helm. We've presented this State of the City Preservation Report and made it available. We are going to sort of hit the highlights and then hopefully have a discussion with you, answer your questions, and talk a little bit about what our objectives are for 2012. Portland is blessed with a rich and distinctive heritage. Public buildings and spaces are distinct, and distinctive neighborhoods are the fabric which links our magnificent natural setting, cultural diversity, and complex history together. These elements are foundational to keeping Portland unique and livable, but maintaining these aspects of our city is a difficult task. The Portland City Council has charged the Historic Landmarks Commission with this responsibility. We are citizen volunteers appointed by the mayor to promote the protection and preservation of Portland's historic and architectural heritage, and to provide leadership and expertise on maintaining and enhancing Portland's architectural and cultural resources. The Commission identifies and protects buildings and other properties that have historic or cultural significance or special architectural merit. We provide advice on historic preservation matters, coordinate historic preservation programs in the city, and are actively involved in the development of design guidelines for historic districts. We take seriously our responsibilities, and as part of that mission, we submit this report as the third annual installment of direct accountability to the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission to the Portland City Council.
To summarize our activities last year, the commission met 14 times during 2011. We conducted a retreat in January of 2011 and then again a few weeks ago. Additionally, our commission chair meets quarterly with the Design Commission chair and the Planning and Sustainability Commission chairs to coordinate and overlap where we have overlapping interests. We met 3 weeks ago on that. Last year, to Commissioner Saltzman's point, we had 97 Type 2 historic design reviews, which are handled by staff. That's actually almost double the number of 2010. A lot of that's fueled by the Irvington Historic District that added 2,800 properties. It's now the largest district in the state, so it's really added a lot of workload. In comparison to pre-recession years, you know, the boom times, it's almost 80% of what staff was reviewing 4 or 5 years ago, and yet they have about half as many staff members. So they're doing a great job of helping us with that workload, but clearly there's a lot of strain on the system with that. So,
for the record, this is Brian Emmerich.
Sorry. Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you.
Vice Chair.
We had three Type 3 historic design reviews, which come to the commission, included the New Blanchet House, the Globe Hotel, the Old Swartman and King Department Store. We also heard five different design advice request proposals. Two of those came to the commission twice. Finally, we had six National Register nominations, which were reviewed and forwarded to the state for recommendation of approval. The commission received 11 briefings that addressed a broad spectrum of topics, including the Portland Plan Update, Centennial Mills Redevelopment Update, Travel Portland, Portland Public Schools, PDC Update and Cornerstones Project, Portland's African-American Building Heritage, and others. In 2011, some of the success points for us were there's renewed interest in the creation of historic districts, notably Irvington and Buckman, which you're going to hear more about. The old Swartman and King Department Store for City Target and the Galleria Building was successfully passed. The Odd Fellows Building, which is affordable senior housing downtown. We had some thoughtful engagement with the Portland Plan, came to the commission several times. New Blanchet House approval and the historic Chinatown went through and is under construction right now. And we had the leadership succession and successfully filled Art DeMuro's shoes, as Carrie noted.
I don't know if successfully yet.
We'll find out.
Yet to be seen, right? One of the preservation priorities we've set for 2012 is to really engage with the planning efforts of the Bureau of Sustainability in their adoption of the Portland Plan, the Central City 2035 Plan, and the Comprehensive Plan that we see are upcoming. For many years, the Commission has worked to expand the view that historic preservation must be one that focuses beyond aesthetic benefits and looks at the role, critical role historic preservation plays in a sustainability agenda. Beginning with the Portland Plan, the Commission has framed this issue more clearly by emphasizing that preservation of the built historic fabric is critical to what makes Portland a vibrant and livable city. Many of these recommendations were incorporated into the draft Portland Plan, and we would like to acknowledge the Bureau of Sustainability and the Planning Commission for incorporating those recommendations. And we ask that the City Council, when they take up the Portland Plan, keep historic preservation in mind when we talk about vibrant, livable cities for the following three reasons. First of all, social equity. All of Portland's older neighborhoods and commercial corridors deserve protection from demolition of irreplaceable historic resources and the construction of incompatible infill, which is highly disruptive to their character and identity. Underserved areas with disadvantaged populations have often been overlooked when it comes to historical and cultural resource protection and the incentivizing of building rehabilitation. The recently completed Bosco Milligan Foundation report, Cornerstone Project, Portland's African American Building History Heritage, suggests that the built history of African Americans remaining in areas of North Portland is being lost at an alarming rate. A reasonable way to respond to gentrification complaints would be to encourage the use of historic preservation and adaptive reuse incentives as critical ingredients of providing social equity when planning for growth. Engaging the community to address equity and the elevation of racial justice requires a concurrent commitment to the historic inventory and preservation of the built environment that has been constructed to house and serve our diverse populations and that embodies their rich and varied histories. The second reason why preservation is important to these planning documents is the way they enhance the 20-minute neighborhood center. Notice I've replaced the hub with center. When discussing the ingredients for what contributes to a vibrant neighborhood center, the preservation of Portland's exciting built environment should be at the top of the list. Vintage neighborhoods and districts with their tree-lined streets, interconnected blocks, and varied texture of high-quality building materials provide a sense of place and unique identity that is critical to each neighborhood's social and economic vitality. Additionally, these older neighborhoods typically have smaller building footprints, human-scaled streets, and centralized commercial areas that provide some of the most walkable and transit-accessible places within the city. The diverse identities of Portland's neighborhoods and districts are an undeniable and irreplaceable part of the city's appeal and livability, and it is this existing built environment that is a central component to their vibrancy. The third element is combating climate change, and we've talked about this before, and you know the data just keeps coming in that adaptive reuse is a It was a real and important sustainability strategy. A stated objective in 2035, the 2035 plan, the Portland plan, and anticipated in other plans is to reduce transportation-related carbon emissions in an effort to address climate change. Although transportation choices contribute 34% to greenhouse gas emissions in Oregon, residential and commercial construction and operations contribute a very close 31%. Reducing carbon emissions is enhanced by embracing a goal of using what you have. In his recent presentation, The Greenest Building, which we had a report on just last week at our Landmarks Commission meeting, Ralph DeNola, a consultant for Preservation Green Lab, noted that the retrofit and reuse of 1% of the buildings slated for demolition over the next 10 years would satisfy 15% of the countywide climate change carbon reduction goals. Adaptive reuse of our existing buildings reduces the amount of demolition and construction waste deposited in landfills, lessens unnecessary demand for energy and other natural resources, and conserves embodied energy. Many historic and older buildings are remarkably energy efficient because of their site sensitivity, quality of construction, and use of passive heating and cooling. According to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, commercial buildings constructed prior to 1920 have an average energy consumption of 80,127 BTUs per square foot. For the more efficient buildings built since 2000, the number is not a significantly lower, 79,703 BTUs. The importance of making planning and development choices that take into account the overall embodied energy, as well as the ongoing energy efficiency of buildings as compared against an existing building, is essential. Older buildings are defining features in neighborhoods' identities and give the city a sense of place. These resources contribute to the neighborhood vibrancy, they stimulate economic development, and they support the cultural and social heritage of areas containing disadvantaged populations. We hope and ask that the Council will support the Commission's efforts in educating, incentivizing, and regulating in a way that further these three objectives.
Thank you very much. Council questions?
I want to talk for a minute about the historic resource inventory, which Commissioner Salzman noted. Dates to 1987 is nearly historic. We're not advocating protection of it, though. Recently, the large citywide planning activities that have been initiated or scheduled to launch next year have made the need for the updated historic resource inventory more important than ever. As part of updating the city's comprehensive plan and the Central City 2035 plan, the city has or will soon have to upgrade background documents, including buildable land, needed housing, industrial lands, and natural resource inventories. Yet, with the Portland plan identified goal of encouraging development and densifying these neighborhood centers and corridors, there are no plans to inventory the historic resources within these areas in advance of making development decisions, which will be shaped by these plans. That's why it's so important. So for the past 2 years, the Historic Landmarks Commission has come to you asking for funds to dedicate to this historic resource inventory. While we haven't received the requested funds yet from Council, our belief in the importance of this effort remains undeterred. We were able to dedicate a small amount of residual State Historic Preservation Office certified local government grant money to commission a historic resource and inventory assessment and recommendations report last year. We've got a copy of that attached. This report identified existing deficiencies within the current historic resource inventory, highlighted some alternative approaches for conducting a citywide survey, identified potential collaborative opportunities and funding sources, outlined overall survey costs, and provided recommendations for the next steps. For that work, the Landmarks Commission's identified two objectives requiring a balance of one, identifying a type of HRI platform or structure that would allow for the greatest ease of data input given the collective and compilation efforts that are going to rely on volunteer labor base who are probably not trained in preservation in all cases. And number two, given these limitations, determining a baseline as to how much information we need to make the inventory a useful and long-term tool. As a means of gauging this balance, the Landmarks Commission worked with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff to submit a 2012 State Historic Preservation Certified Local Government Grant request to include further survey work in a number of neighborhood centers and corridors. The idea is we want to try to focus on some of these areas that we know where development's going to be coming based on the Portland plan that's in the works. And a lot of these structures are of historic resources are constructed from unreinforced masonry that hasn't been seismically upgraded, so they're at risk to damage from earthquakes. There's an overlap there between the neighborhood centers and these unreinforced masonry buildings, so we see the survey as a chance to create a starting point to compile a citywide historic resource index while providing an opportunity to join it with emergency management bureaus, both local and national, who would benefit from the opportunity to gauge the seismic risk. We're basically looking at this as like a small pilot to be able to determine how can we enact this in other areas as we expand and more money becomes available. In terms of budget, the grant will provide $9,000 plus an equal match from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff time. The Landmarks Commission is committed to continually chipping away at the HRI. It's something we feel so essential to setting priorities for preservation and planning and making informed decisions about the future growth of the city. The Landmarks Commission would, of course, welcome greater commitment of funds from City Council to continue this much-needed effort.
Great. Oh, were you finished? Or?
No, we're not finished. No?
Okay.
Just stopping to see if you had a comment or a question or anything.
Let me just do some time management. Take your time. I know we have people here who are here for the police training matter, which is a time certain at 10:15. Given the number of people who've signed up to testify, I think we can safely say that'll be pushed back at least a half an hour. We're going to take, we'll finish this item before we get to that one.
Thank you. The third item on our agenda for your consideration this morning is relates to the discussion over design fees and the need to streamline the review process. One of the greatest preservation successes of the last few years has been the designation of the Irvington National Historic District. As the first new district created since 2001, the residents have struggled with a steep learning curve in terms of understanding the review requirements associated with obtaining building modifications. This has only been exacerbated by the lack of clear design guidelines. There are no design guidelines for Irvington, and the recent imposition of a new fee structure requiring that all development reviews pay for themselves. Most particularly in terms of fees, the minimum fee for all permit-related work for Bureau of Development Services is $1,050. This is a fee, for example, for removal of a non-original vinyl window and replacing it with a wood window, something that we should be encouraging. These fees place too large a burden on property owners seeking to make small modifications and are so high that they inadvertently encourage individuals to make repairs or modifications without going through review. The Buckman neighborhood, which spent the last 4 to 5 years compiling a National Register Historic District proposal that it was ready to file in the next few months, has had to put its efforts on hold, given the uproar over the fees assessed for minor reviews. It's important to remember that the commission does not set design fees. So we're sort of in the middle of a storm that we don't have a lot of control over, but we are sensitive to issues outside of our purview when they discourage preservation efforts, either in terms of individual building restoration efforts or the creation of historic districts, the education of the public on the benefits of preservation. The Commission is also mindful of the City Council's severely restricted budget that is likely to require even further BDS cuts this coming budget cycle. Given these significant countervailing interests, we support efforts by neighbors, our preservation partners, and Bureau of Development Service with regard to the following four particular areas. And these are areas that both Paul and Commissioner Salzman raised, so we're all sort of in agreement of what the solution needs to be. First, we need to revise the fee structure so that large projects could shoulder more of the overall preservation review budget while still remaining cost neutral. We need to make code amendments that would authorize certain minor development activities to be undertaken without review, such as window repair or replacement with like-kind materials and design. We propose dedicating a small amount of BDS time to reorganizing and updating the Historic Design Review website presence by providing better instruction on design review triggers and application procedures. This would be coupled with a commitment by the Commission to issue preservation best practices, memos, or manuals on key design review issues such as window repair and replacement, and by reducing demand on staff time, thereby reducing demand on staff time in education efforts. And we've got a subcommittee created right now that is going to start working on that immediately. Number four, adopt the Secretary of Interior standards for rehabilitation, which into the incorporate those into the code, which would unify the way the state and the city deals with rehabilitation and would provide a clear preservation hierarchy. This would serve as a stopgap measure for those districts who do not have yet have design guidelines or in cases of out-of-date guidelines, which is currently the case for all of our historic districts. We understand that all parties are looking into the fee situation, but we implore the council to provide more, not less, in the way of general fund monies to BDS to help cover the cost to administer these important regulations. Make it a Bureau of Planning Sustainability work plan and budget item to include funding for zoning code amendments to the historic design review regulations that will exempt truly minor projects from historic design review and simplify the regulations in an effort to reduce BDS administrative costs. Both of these steps are essential to gain public support for historic preservation in Portland neighborhoods, and not just for those already created, but for those who are considering it. Keep in mind that historic preservation efforts, especially when organized through historic districts, work to preserve and enhance property values, which in turn increase property tax and generate legitimate revenue for the city.
Fourth item on our agenda is to talk about our ongoing coordination and the importance of that with Portland Development Commission. In April 2011, the Landmarks Commission had the opportunity to meet with representatives of PDC and the mayor's office to discuss a number of items that we had raised before council last year. The meeting was productive, and from it, PDC produced a list of real property it owns, an assessment of each of the properties, the level of historic significance, as well as the PDC's most current plans of disposing it. If you remember, most of this came out of the Blanchet House case. In an effort to increase communication between the Landmarks Commission and PDC, PDC has appointed an employee as a Landmarks liaison who attended the Landmarks Commission meeting in November and briefed the commission on current PDC activities and challenges. All the parties agree that improved communication between the two commissions that results in the earliest possible discussion of potential conflict can only be beneficial to both the organizations. On that front, we'd like to have another follow-up meeting with PDC this spring, and we'll follow that up with the mayor and his staff to try to set that up again. Although this issue is brought up as part of the PDC meeting, the Landmarks Commission would like the City Council's support of a policy that restricts the use of urban renewal money or any public money for the demolition of National Register properties, either intentionally or by neglect. The Council should consider including within the Portland Plan the obligation to prioritize the investment of public dollars in projects that enhance stewardship of city-owned resources and that encourage maintenance and rehabilitation of existing buildings over demolition to clear land for new construction. This plan policy would be consistent with the statutory mandate in ORS, which stipulates that cities must assure that historically significant properties within its control should not be demolished, substantially altered, or allowed to deteriorate. The Landmarks Commission is especially sensitive to this issue, given the development plans now for the old Blanchet House, which is still standing where they moved to the new building, and Centennial Mills has not yet been identified. A city that embraces sustainability, preservation, and stewardship must not expend public funds in efforts that so blatantly hamper these objectives.
Finally, we'd like to raise the issue of the adoption of the Skidmore Old Town Historic Guidelines. It's now been 3 years since we forwarded to you our proposed design guidelines and cast iron resolution for Skidmore Old Town for approval. The controversy blockading the adoption of the design guidelines and cast iron resolution is all centered around the proposed amendments to the zoning ordinance, which calls for inappropriate height and scale in our only national landmark district. Last year, our esteemed chair, Art DeMuro, met with the mayor's office, offering a compromise that would have allowed additional height to go forward on approximately half of the properties identified to receive it. That offer was rejected. Again, we say it is regretful that this prior investment of public time and resources generated documents that all agree as a paradigm for historic district review guidelines in the city, and yet they sit on the shelf unadopted. The Landmarks Commission is committed to reaching out and moving these forward whenever anyone is in the City Council is interested in talking further about this, but we understand that this may just get folded into the planning process that's moving forward right now, and we will continue to push for their adoption. This time, we have completed our report. I understand that a number of people have signed up to testify, and I'm guessing that their testimony is going to relate primarily to design review fees. My suggestion would be that maybe we hear from the representatives of recognized historic entities, Bosco Milligan. I know Milligan's here, the National Trust representatives. We've got a couple of representatives from historic districts, or however you all would like to move forward, but we're willing to cede any other time unless you want to have questions or discussion with us.
We have 11 people who've signed up, and if it's okay with the council, what I would suggest is we call them up, let them testify, and then we'll have you back if there are questions.
Right.
I did have just one question. You mentioned the adoption of the U.S. Interior Department standards for rehabilitation. So, I mean, is that a simple thing that we would simply, or is it not simple?
It's very simple. There are 10, I think there are 10 standards, and they prioritize preservation as most important, and then identify rehabilitation strategies that are the least impactful to buildings. They are published by the Secretary of Interior, and we would adopt them wholesale into the zoning code to provide a framework in cases where we don't have specific design guidelines or where our design guidelines don't really apply.
And I think, you know, it would give us basically two tools. One is a lot of these historic districts don't have a lot of information in the design guidelines, so it would give us a base document. But it also would help us to be more in line with the National Trust on issues like the appeal to count, or to the commission last year on the Oregon College of Oriental Medicine was related to a mechanical rooftop issue, which was in conflict with our standards. So it would just allow us to be able to get those in alignment a little more.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Carla, we have, I believe, 11 people signed up?
Yes.
Let's invite four at a time, and we'll ask everyone to try to keep their remarks to 2 minutes.
Okay. First four, please come on up, are Christine Yoon, Barb Christopher, Kathy Galbraith, and Denise McGriff.
Good morning, and welcome to City Council. Who would like to go first?
I would. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Christine Yoon. As chair of the Buckman Historic Association, my comments are on the Buckman Neighborhood Proposed Historic District. Buckman matters and deserves saving. It is the oldest surviving intact area of Portland east of the Willamette. The early story of Portland's development as a major city can be read from the pattern of building and the buildings themselves. Buckman tells the story of the middle and working classes, one as equally valid as the stories behind wealthier historic districts. In 2006-2007, at the height of the last building boom, Buckman residents realized that regular citizens have no say in shaping the future of their own neighborhoods. At this time, historic homes were being torn down and replaced by boxy buildings which maximized allowable built volume and did not respect the scale or character of the neighborhood they landed in. With little support from the city on neighborhood development issues, our solution was to put our efforts behind a National Register Historic District nomination to protect neighborhood character, diversity, and livability. The current design review fee structure and process is threatening this effort, and we have elected to put the nomination on hold and work on the fee and process issues. Many residents of Buckman would like to preserve its historic character. Mention to them, though, the high design review fees and a lengthy, uncertain review process for simple replacement of windows or doors, and immediately they no longer support the regulations of a historic district. It is hard to ask them to keep in mind a long-term view of preserving the neighborhood for the greater good when all they can see is that they are being penalized for owning and caring for a historic home. Portland's riches are its residential neighborhoods with their front porches and backyards. 4 to 5 story monolithic buildings occupying entire blocks are no substitute for the richness and patterning of a neighborhood built over decades by different builders and architects. The oldest homes in Buckman and